All right, here we go, John. It has been scientifically proven that COVID spreads more efficiently indoors than it does out of doors. Major League Baseball has 7 indoor stadiums, including the Astros, the Mariners, and the D-backs, all of which the Dodgers will play. Should those teams be forced to move their games to outside venues?
Well, I know in the case of the Diamondbacks, they can open the roof. Do you know if that's true in the case of the Mariners, and who was the other one?
Houston cannot open the roof.
Are you sure?
It's never been open when I was there, but I was only there during the playoffs. Can Minute Maid Park be open?
I think, Mace, all three of those places can open the roof. Just make them open the roof. Now, the question becomes, what if it's raining? In Seattle, it rains a lot. In Houston, it rains almost every day.
It can open over a small central section, Minute Maid Park can.
Okay, so I know that Chase Field, if it's still called that, in Phoenix, can open almost all the way. But the question is, okay, and it's a hard one, it starts raining. Do you close the roof and keep playing, or do you call off the game?
Boy, it's a great question. You've got to play 60 games in 66 days.
Yeah, there's almost – that's a good point. There's almost no time for a rainout.
Yeah, you really can't afford a rainout. So you probably try to find a way to get the game in.
Now, and think about it. There's no fans.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about fans. That's right.
Yeah, you probably do. You probably close the roof and play.
But, hadn't even thought about that till I was looking at – highlights this last weekend from Houston. Yeah, Houston, at least when I've been there for the postseason, has always had a roof, but it can open slightly. As long as those buildings can open slightly, I think it increases the circulation, and they probably don't have to move the games out of doors.
All right, Macy, Atlanta Braves, you know, the Redskins announced today they're changing their names. They did not say what they're changing it to. They just announced they're getting rid of Redskins. The Atlanta Braves have now said they won't change their name, but they might get rid of the tomahawk chop. That na 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 na, where all the fans are doing the chop. What do you think of not changing the name, but maybe getting rid of the chop?
Well, they should get rid of the chop no matter what. I mean, the tomahawk is like a sacred item.
By the way, the Chiefs do the chop too. The Kansas City Chiefs do it too.
It's a sacred, the tomahawk is sacred to Native American people. So it seems like getting rid of the chop is, first of all, be kind of tough to do because fans just do it spontaneously, but they should absolutely do it.
Well, they can stop playing the song and they can get the ushers to tell people to knock it off if they see it starting. You can slowly eradicate it.
Yeah. As for changing the names, I'm having such a hard time with Braves and Blackhawks and Chiefs.
What about Indians?
Indians, I kind of made up my mind. That one's got to go.
Lindsay, you're an Indians fan. Are you there with the Indians? You want them to change the name?
I mean, I don't want them to, but I can understand the sentiment, and I can understand why it seems like it's the thing to do, especially after Tito Francona came out over the weekend and said he thinks it's time to change. And I think, like, once he says it, you kind of can't go back from that.
Right. Yeah, let's you know what they're thinking. But Lindsay, if I left it up to you, if it was your decision only, would you change it?
No.
Yeah, I think most Indian fans feel that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I'm biased.
I'm anti-chop. I don't think you should do the tomahawk chop anymore. But should they change the nickname of the team from Braves? Should they change the nickname from Blackhawks and Chiefs? I really don't know the answers to those questions.
And that's okay to say that. What I would say about that is,
I mean, I could be hot take Mace and just say, you know, choose a side. But I'm struggling with it myself because I see both sides.
And as two white guys on the radio, we really don't get to decide. You know, we're not offended, but we're not in those groups. I mean, so if they, I'm with Lindsay. If they announced they were changing it, I would say, all right, I get it. I probably wouldn't have done it, but I'm not the one being offended. So I put yourselves in the shoes of the people that are offended. I think you get to a different place.
Yeah, in the end, I think they all will wind up changing. I don't know if it'll happen now.
Really? You think Blackhawks change? You think Chiefs change? Wow.
I do.
Yeah, I'm kind of the other way.
Because you're using a race of people as your mascot.
Yeah.
That's where I come down on it. Pat Mahomes did an interview on SportsCenter Friday, which he said his goal is to surpass Tom Brady's 6 Super Bowl rings. John, what chance do you give Patrick Mahomes of winning 7 or more Super Bowl rings?
Under 10%, just because there's only been one guy who's ever done it. I love Patrick Mahomes. I think he's a great player. But you start talking about winning 6 titles, come on, man. You need a lot of things to go right, and you probably need Andy Reid to hang around for another 20 years, and I'm not sure Andy Reid's got that in him. I think Mahomes will win more than the one he has, but I'm not saying he's getting to 7.
Yeah, when I die, John, Tom Brady will still hold the record for most Super Bowl rings for a starting quarterback. I don't think that Patrick Mahomes... It's such... What Brady and Belichick did was so unprecedented. We've never seen anything like it in the NFL.
And a lot of those Super Bowls, people thought they weren't going to win, and they won them anyway.
Oh, yeah, a lot of times. I mean, one of them, they were down gigantic at halftime and still came back and won. So I don't think he's going to surpass Tom Brady. I think he'll get at least one more and maybe two more, but it's really hard every year to come back, especially with the salary cap and changes that need to be made, and ultimately he'll need to get paid. So he'll win one or two more, but he's not going to win 7.
All right, Mace, according to the New York Times, regardless of party, all right, so whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, an independent, regardless of party, Facebook is considering banning political advertising across its network before the November general election. The core of the debate is whether banning those ads would help or harm giving users a voice. Stopping ads could stifle free speech for some groups, though allowing political ads to run could also allow more misinformation that could disenfranchise voters. Good idea or bad idea to ban all political ads from Facebook?
It's a great idea. I hope that they do it. You know, 40% of Americans say their primary source of news is Facebook, and there is a lot of misinformation and hateful stuff on Facebook. There's also a lot of stuff, a lot of ads that were placed by Russian bots during the last election cycle.
Yeah.
So it does secure that, too. I'm in favor of getting rid of all political ads on Facebook.
I think it would be smart, just because I actually think it would be good for Facebook.
Oh, it'd be so... It's such a relief to Facebook. Facebook is so hard to go on.
They'd lose a lot of money, but I think they don't need money. They're richer than rich. I think people would say, oh, I can go back there now. It's not this cesspool of arguing.
Yeah, Facebook is so hard to go to now because so much of it is just angry political stuff. Maybe it would cut down on that and my mom could get her recipes more easily.
Yeah, by the way, we both agree they should do it. You think they will?
I think they probably will. I think there's been a lot of heat around this issue, around Facebook, and there have been a lot of sponsors who have dropped off.
Why not try it?
Yeah. There's a quiet boycott of Facebook by some really big advertisers. So, yeah, I think they might do it. Tampa Bay Rays catcher Kevon Smith says that wearing a mask in Florida isn't easy. He was in a store shopping for food, and a resident called the player a pansy for wearing his mask. He goes on to say, jeez, I went out briefly just to pick up some takeout food, and I swear I got like a dozen eyeballs on me, looking at me like a weirdo walking in a mask. Little do they know what is at stake for my life and my livelihood. John, why is wearing a mask so difficult in the state of Florida?
It shouldn't be. I went to the store today, and everyone had a mask. I was in a Ralph's, and it was packed. There were long lines at every cash register. Not one person without a mask. When did this thing become, if you wear a mask, you're a pansy? Is that the word you used?
Yeah, that's what somebody called this catcher from the race.
Have you even thought for a second about putting a mask on?
Not at all. I've
thought the opposite. I've thought, oh, I like today. I walked out of my car. I was someplace, and I said, "Oh, I I forgot my mask, and I went
back to the car.
Yeah, I went back to my car and got it rather than.
I keep an emergency mask in the car just in case I forget to bring a mask from the house. I got a mask in the car.
I have 10 in the car.
I think that this issue, personally, I've experienced it. I think it's pretty much, it has a lot to do with where you live, because in California, I've yet to see anybody where this has been an issue. I don't see people like sneaking in with the mask on and taking it off while they're shopping.
Lindsay, about in Ohio? You went home for a while. What about in Ohio?
Yeah, and I was going to say in Ohio, I would say maybe 50% of the people, maybe 50-50, but I would think probably a little bit less. Yeah, it's so weird to me. And it's like a big point of contention. I see you guys are talking about Facebook with the political thing. It's not only become an issue of whether or not you're like manly, but it's like this is a human rights thing and a political thing. And it's really sad that like a piece of protection, it's meant to protect people, has turned into this political statement.
Am I being naive here? I don't get it. I don't get why someone would have an objection to anyone wearing a mask. I'm not so sure that particularly if I was out of state, Mace, if I was visiting another state and I walked into a store with a mask, I wouldn't, like when I was driving up to Pebble Beach, I wore a mask when I stopped to get gas and went into convenience stores like up in Central and Northern California, into some of those counties that didn't have a lot of corona. And I was one of maybe two or three people out of 15 or 20 that had a mask on, but I never felt insecure. I didn't get any dirty looks. This is a thing now. If you have a mask on, you're going to get shamed.
Here's what's weird. It's viewed by some people as political correctness to wear a mask.
Really?
Yeah.
Don't get it.
Again, I think in most places in California, pretty much everywhere I've ever been, people will give you a mean look, like a bad look, and you probably won't
completely
even
agree.
In most places.
I'm uncomfortable when I see somebody not in a mask, and even if I pass them walking on the street, I'm uncomfortable. I just think it's such an easy step to take, and it's, you know, the one thing that they found over and over again is that, you know, they always say you wear it for other people. So apparently super spreaders, asymptomatic people who don't know that they have the virus, wearing that mask can keep them from passing it to everybody around them. So wearing that mask, even if you don't have symptoms, is unbelievably important. It's not just to keep yourself from getting sick. It's also to keep you, if you happen to be asymptomatic, from getting a whole bunch of other people sick. And by the way, I thought it was encouraging. I saw a picture of the president wore a mask this weekend, which is good. Everybody's doing it.
I saw it's Andrew Cuomo, who's the governor of New York, right?
Yes.
Chris is the news anchor. Andrew's governor. He sent out a tweet today with two pictures of himself. One of them, he had a mask on. The other one, he had his mask lowered around his chin.
Yep.
And he said, in one of these pictures, I'm wearing a mask. In the other one, I'm using it as a chin strap. Don't be an idiot and use it. Don't be a chin strap guy. Wear a mask.
And by the way, put it over your nose. Don't put it under your nose. It bugs me when I see people put it under their nose instead of over their nose. It kind of defeats the whole purpose. And I see that all the time. And I want to say, dude, pull that over your nose.
Yeah, what happens if they sneeze? The mask serves no purpose.
Exactly.
All right. We got time for one more?
Yeah, one more.
Okay. So yesterday, Mace, ESPN reported that for safety reasons, players needed to get in the NBA bubble, needed to put their uniforms on in the hotel and then get on the bus, and then they would just get to the arena and then go play, and then they would, because they're not going to shower there, they would just go back afterwards and shower.
Yeah.
Today, ESPN was told that they misunderstood and that players are being told now they can wear whatever they want when they go to the arena.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is a lot of these guys have fashion deals. For example, Kyle Kuzma has a deal with Puma that pays him more than the Lakers do. Russell Westbrook has made a name for, you know, Russ thinks he announced today he has coronavirus, but he thinks he's going to be back in time for the games.
Right.
He treats it as kind of an event to wear something different every time he walks in. What's the right side of this issue? Err on the safe side and tell everybody to get dressed at the hotel, or let these guys use their creativity and wear whatever they want?
So it's a question of safety or style.
Yeah, but you could still wear a mask and wear shorts and, you know, glasses with no lenses or whatever you want to do. I mean, I don't think, as long as you wear a mask, I think I'm okay with either.
But aren't they then showering at the facility?
No, they would still shower. They would just change at the facility, but they would still shower back at the hotel.
Into their uniform, and then they would bring everything home and take a shower.
Correct.
I think that's totally fine. I mean, I think at this point, I mean, they're wearing these Aura rings. They're wearing beepers that beep every time somebody gets within a certain number of feet of you. I mean, there's a certain number of things that you're able to do.
You know what I would do?
What?
Full V. Stiviano, man. Beekeeper face shield mask. I would do like different styles and colors and all that stuff. I'd double up like waiters do now. I'd wear a regular mask like we're all wearing, and then I'd go to the beekeeper. Face shield.
There you go. Face shield.
I'd walk in looking like Darth Vader. Why not?
It's one way to go. One way to go. All right. Coming up next for you, John, somebody, a very smart guy, took the time to write a very detailed DM to me on Friday, and it was after our conversation about DeSean Jackson. And Steven Jackson,
okay.
And the anti-Semitic tropes that were put out there by DeSean. So, it's something that we haven't thought about, not the way we thought about it, and not the verdict that I sort of came down on, or you sort of came down on Friday. But I want to read that coming up next for you.
Okay,
Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Monday, cranking it up for another week. Don't forget, the LAFC, the Black and Gold, is playing tonight. That game starts at 5, and we are streaming it on the ESPN app. You can check that out.
So before you get to this DM that you got, you know, we're having Tim Bontemps on here in a minute. Do you want to hold it until after Tim?
Yeah, let's hold it until after Tim, yeah.
So, you know,
it's a broader conversation.
Right, that's what I thought. All right, so one thing that I, you know, during the break, we were talking about how Buster Olney has been on our show a couple of times in the last month or so, and Buster is very pessimistic.
He's gloomy.
That the Major League Baseball, when we had him on last Friday, he said 30% chance they start on time, 0% chance they finish. The NBA percentages, if you asked most people, Mace, would be much higher, wouldn't they? Like, I think 90% they start on time, 70% they finish.
No, I'd go further. I'd say 100% they're going to start. And I'd say a good 80% they're going to finish.
Yeah.
I have great faith in the bubble.
I do, too. Are we overestimating the willpower of players, and you know the fact that, you know, like I said before, Stephen A, a lot of other people say these guys are going to find a way to get girls into the bubble. Are we being naive thinking otherwise?
Well, if that becomes the thing, in other words, if sneaking girls into the bubble becomes the norm, then I think there's no chance that they finish the season.
And wouldn't it be riskier, or at least equally as risky, if a guy snuck out of the bubble to go hook up?
Same thing. Yeah. Hey, I want to go try that restaurant across town. Or, hey, I want to get out for the night. I want to go to a club. I want to go to a strip club. Whatever that happens to be. I don't know if that stuff is open in Florida or not. But, yeah, no, a guy going out and bringing it back, same thing. Girl bringing it in, you know, wives and girlfriends will be allowed to join the players in a month when they get down to the final eight teams. Just hold
well,
off.
Hopefully not for the same player. Hopefully the same player doesn't bring the wife and the girlfriend, because if those
That's
two meet, then you got a problem.
Yeah, pick a side. Pick a side.
I had a friend that works for another team, another NBA team in another state, and she one of the things she was in charge of was tickets for the players. And one time she put the girlfriend and the wife in the same section. And let's just say it was the last time she ever made that mistake.
Mm. Yeah. Big mistake.
Yeah. But Tim Bontemps is joining us now. And Tim, of course, writes for ESPN, covers the NBA. Tim, thank you for doing this, man. Let me ask you, Mason and I are both highly optimistic that this NBA bubble is going to start on time and that it's going to finish. Are we overestimating the players a bit? Like, for example, we were just talking about, are players going to try and sneak girls in? We think that the whole thing's going to work. Are we being Pollyanna about this?
I wouldn't quite say Pollyanna. I mean, I think you're probably being a little overly optimistic at this stage. I think we need to get through the next couple of weeks first. You know, the fact that the NBA put out there were two positive tests today, out of, you know, the 300 and some that have been conducted so far inside the bubble, I think is a positive. It seems like the virus so far has not gotten inside. I think if there are no positive tests over the next 7 to 10 days, I'll feel a lot better about the chance of this thing getting pulled off, because as we've seen with MLS, where two teams have had to drop out, we had a game postponed yesterday. Once the bubble gets inside, or once the virus gets inside the bubble, I should say, things get much more complicated in terms of trying to keep it out. So I think if the NBA can get through the month of July, you know, with either no more positive tests or, you know, one or two more or something like that, I think at that point I'll feel extremely confident they can get done. But these next couple of weeks are really critical, and I want to see how they play out before I kind of make a definitive statement one way or the other on.
Well, it is encouraging that there were only two positive tests of 322 players since arriving inside the bubble. I mean, that suggests that they did a good job of screening when they were in their home markets, and they're definitely on the right track. The one thing that John and I have talked about today is this idea that that guys are going to try to sneak girls into the bubble, or in the case of today, you know, a Postmates delivery person was part of potentially spoiling the bubble with Rashawn Holmes. You know, do you think that guys are buying in fully and understand the ramifications of potentially breaking this bubble?
Yeah, I think so for the most part. I mean, both the Bruno thing and the Rashawn Holmes thing sound like kind of dumb mistakes, right? Like, I know it's a yacht club where the Kings are. I think there are some places there, from what I understand, where the kind of the line that you're not supposed to cross isn't exactly clear. So it sounded like he just kind of stepped over the line to get some food.
Yep.
And, you know, I think, frankly, you know, there are no games for 3 weeks. And I think if you're trying to, you know, kind of send a message, it's probably a good time to do that when you're not actually costing anyone
any
money.
That's a good point, yeah.
Right? So I think, you know, and let's be honest, like, Rashawn Holmes is not LeBron James.
Right.
Neither is Bruno Caboclo. It's not James Harden. It's not Giannis. Like, I think it's kind of an easy way to send a message and be like, hey, look, don't, you know, we're not messing around with this stuff. And again, like, you're not taking any money out of Rashawn Holmes' pocket. So, because if, you know, if this 10-day quarantine had happened on July 25th and he missed three games, he'd lose three game checks. Right, or whatever the...
He'd lose $150,000.
Yeah,
something.
It's a good point.
Some level of money. Whereas in this scenario, he has to sit in his hotel room for a week and a half, but there's no money lost, and it's kind of a teachable moment for everybody. So, look, I think I know that there were some players, Joel Embiid and Damian Lillard and others, who expressed skepticism about guys following the rules. I never actually thought that was a problem, personally. I think the shame factor of not wanting to be the next Rudy Gobert,
high
for people, right? And look, I also think that, frankly, these guys want to get it through this thing,
sure.
Right? Like, they want to play, they want to stay healthy. I think guys are concerned about the virus, and, you know, I mean, they're in this bubble. There's not really much of an excuse for them to leave. The families are going to be able to be there in 6 weeks, or they're going to be home. So, you know, at that point, you know, I think from that standpoint, things are going to work out okay.
We're talking to Tim Bontemps from ESPN. Tim, the Lakers already knew that they weren't going to have Avery Bradley. Now, within the last 48 hours, they've lost Rajon Rondo. Are those significant blows to the Lakers' title chances, or not so much?
I think Avery Bradley is a much more significant blow than Rondo is. You know, the Avery's role is, I think, a little bit overstated just in general. I think it has been for a few years. But when you look at the Lakers roster, he fills a role that they don't really have a lot of other guys who can. in terms of being able to guard the opposing point guard effectively. They really only have him and KCP as guys who can defend smaller guards well. So if say the Lakers play the Blazers in the first round, and you know you have Damian Lillard on the other side and even CJ McCollum, like that's going to be a bit of a problem to deal with. I think Rondo, you know, at times I think you could argue that other guys like Alex Caruso potentially are a better fit on the court for the Lakers. The numbers have bore that out at times in terms of playing with LeBron. He certainly can help them at times when LeBron isn't on the court. He has good relationship and good chemistry with Anthony Davis on the time in New Orleans and the Kentucky connection. But I think ultimately having him back by sometime early in the playoffs is fine. The Avery situation, I think, is one that could really be a problem for them as things progress.
How big a problem?
I mean, it's going to be a real issue, I think. I mean, the Lakers, to me, don't have a ton of people who can guard on the perimeter to begin with. I mean, when they're playing at their best, it's probably only really KCP, Avery Bradley, and Danny Green that I'm going to be super comfortable with in a big spot. Maybe you throw a guy like Caruso in there, but you know, I think it could be a significant thing. I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's probably going to come down to, against teams like the Clippers and some of these high-level teams, you know, will LeBron and AD be at A++ level, and then can these other guys make threes, right? That's probably going to determine how far the Lakers go. But, like, let's say they play against the Rockets in the second round, and Houston has a bunch of 6'6 and under guys running around. Well, if you're down one good perimeter player, that's a problem, right? So I think those are probably the situations where teams try to go small against them that it probably is going to hurt that you have a reliable perimeter defender and shooter that's not available.
We're talking to Tim Bontemps from ESPN. Tim, I want to see if where LeBron would fit in on the list you just gave for guys who can defend, particularly on the perimeter. Earlier in his career, LeBron was an all-defense player. He had that one series in, I think it was 2011, where Derrick Rose was the MVP, and at one point in that series, LeBron said, "That's it, I'm taking him." At his age and at this point in his career, we've seen the ridiculous shape he's in. Does he have that club in his bag? If he wants to be a lockdown defender at this stage, can he do it, in your opinion?
I mean, I don't want to say LeBron can't do anything, but I think if it comes down to the point where LeBron is having to guard, you know, say
Harden.
Kawhi.
Yeah, your Kawhi.
Or Harden, right, at one end, and then try to be the entire engine of the offense at the other end, probably in the end going to be a bad thing for the Lakers, right? And that's not meant to be any disrespect to LeBron, but he's 35, and we're talking about, you know, that if it's, say, the Clippers, that's after playing, you know, every other day for the better part of a month straight with probably not much of a break in between. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it's possible. I wouldn't rule it out, but I've kind of thought from the beginning with the Lakers that that's going to ultimately be the thing that's going to prevent them from getting to the finals and eventually win the title, is I just think they're a guy or two short, particularly on the wings. For the way the game is played now in the NBA, and obviously losing Avery doesn't help with that. But, you know, look, LeBron played at a better defensive level this year than he had in several years prior, and if you told me he turned it up a few notches in the playoffs and really buckled down and, you know, guarded a Kawhi or Giannis or somebody and did it effectively at both ends, I mean, it'd be kind of foolish at this point to say LeBron is incapable of doing something given everything he's accomplished thus far.
Last thing, it sounds like you're not taking the Lakers to win the championship.
I thought the Clippers are the best team in the league all year. I would still tend to say that. Look, who knows what's going to happen in this bubble, right? Anything really is possible, but I think when you just go down the roster guy for guy, I think the Clippers are definitely a deeper team. I think, you know, the one thing that's kind of we're unable to really account for here is the strain of having to play every other day in the playoffs and not have any built-in gaps like there typically are. LeBron's older, that could weigh down on him. And the other thing that's pretty critical too is, as you guys well know, the Lakers are going to have a big advantage if these games were at Staples Center. I mean, it was going to essentially be 5.5 or 6 home games, probably, over 7 games for the Lakers in that series, and now they have none. So I think in that scenario, too, I think it probably benefits the Clippers. So I would say if you're asking me who gets out of the West, I do think it's the Clippers, but you know, LeBron and AD are great. And, you know, if they go out there and, you know, play at A++ level, they could certainly make me look foolish in the end.
Tim, right. Thanks for doing this, man.
Thanks, Tim.
Anytime, guys. Talk to you soon.
All right, there's Tim Bontemps from ESPN.
You know,
all right, so
there's one, you know, the Clippers, they've just never done it, and it's hard to get over that wall.
Sure.
The first time. And Kawhi's done it, but none of those other guys have. Paul George hasn't. Patrick Beverley hasn't. Montrezl Harrell hasn't. Even Marcus Morris hasn't. You know, so that's something to think about, too, that when everything's on the line, can that group get over that wall?
But with LeBron has obviously done it. On the Lakers roster, the players who have done it,
LeBron,
Jared Smith.
Danny Green,
right.
LeBron. AD won a title in college.
Yeah.
And I think he has an Olympic gold medal, but that's easy.
It is easy.
I'm not saying the Lakers. The fact that LeBron has been in the finals like every year of his career.
Yeah.
Is the big thing that the Lakers have going for him. And the other thing the reason I picked the Lakers over the Clippers is that LeBron and AD are going to play 40 minutes.
Yes.
So are Kawhi and Paul George. But if that's the case, if those four are going 40 minutes, and by the way, this was on display on that final Sunday before they shut the season down. They just left LeBron out there and he took over the game.
Yep.
So that's why I'm leaning Lakers.
All right. Coming up next for you. Did we, and I mean you and me, and the world, go too easy on DeSean Jackson? Got that coming up next for you, plus Radio Tinder is at 4:45. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, 710 ESPN, Mason in Ireland. What is going on? Thanks to Tim Bontemps for joining us. For joining us.
Did you take the N out of his name for some reason?
It's Bontemps?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I did. I missed the N.
Okay.
Silent N. It has a silent
N. For you.
N. Yeah.
Yeah,
for me.
Okay.
So I got a very, very good DM. And by the way, my DMs are always open. My email's always open. VenniceMace@gmail.com. You can go to SteveMason.com, and there's a contact page where you can get a hold of me. So I'm readily available. And I got a really good DM. From a guy named Jonathan Gabbai, G-A-B-B-A-I. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
It's Gabbai, but go ahead.
Gabbai, okay. I want to start by saying I really appreciate you and John having the conversation about what DeSean Jackson and Steven Jackson said. Your work throughout this entire year has been phenomenal, but I think you're missing something on this topic. You guys compared this situation to what happened with Drew Brees, and you got it all wrong. This should be compared to the college football coach, Mike Gundy, who had that shirt on with just a news network on it. You knew by him wearing it exactly what he thought. Without hesitation, you called for him to be fired. You didn't for a second believe his apologies. Well, Mason, this wasn't just a shirt. These were extremely ignorant and hateful words that DeSean actually thought out, wrote down, and had a chance to delete, but press sent anyway. Imagine at this time in our history, if any other race had quoted Hitler or a Confederate leader and said the things DeSean said about Jews, but instead about African Americans, the outrage would be unimaginable, and we would all call for that person to be gone, and rightfully so. Now, he says, I'm not one who believes in cancel culture. My point isn't to cancel, but to show that for some reason, hate against Jews is looked at a bit differently. All hate, regardless of skin, religion, or creed, needs to stop. Mason, you mentioned cultural blindness on the show, but DeSean wrote is not cultural blindness. This is racism, and that is what it needs to be called. The trope you spoke of yesterday is something that is echoed loudly throughout the world. If we don't make our voices louder to stop that, the hate will continue. We are less than 0.2% of the global population, yet there are more hate crimes committed against Jews in this country than any other race or ethnicity. I think we went light on DeSean Jackson.
Oh, I know we did. And part of it is I think everybody did. But there's a few reasons for it. Number one, Deshaun is doing everything right. He's done everything right since he made that stupid mistake. I read today that he's been talking to rabbis and going to synagogues. He's contemplating a trip to Jerusalem. He's taking up Julian Edelman.
He's been invited to visit Auschwitz by leaders in Jerusalem. Yeah.
And so he's doing all the things you would want somebody who made this mistake to do. He's not trying to run and hide from it. But to get to the point, what was the first name of the person that tweeted
Jonathan.
You? To get to the heart of Jonathan's point, I was blown away, and I mentioned it to you the other day, blown away by the lack of reaction by other NFL players. And you, we asked Scott Kaplan, who's Jewish, and you both thought, well, there just aren't very many NFL Jewish players.
Which is true.
It just didn't hit home with anybody. But I thought Matthew Berry, and Rachel Nichols was outspoken on this too, I thought they both made great points, and Jonathan made it to you. Hate is hate. You don't have to be part of, quote-unquote, the tribe to be offended or to call it out. Just like you don't have to be black to come to the defense of the Black Lives Matter movement and be outraged by what happened to George Floyd. And I was surprised that more people didn't come down hard on Deshaun Jackson from inside the NFL. The Eagles did it. The league did it. Very few other players did it. And boy, did they come after Drew Brees.
But you know what I'm thinking, though, is it's the whole world kind of let the thing slide. It wasn't just other players. It was the whole world kind of let the thing slide. If it had been, let's just throw out a scenario. If it had been a white guy, prominent white guy using the N-word, we would have said, that guy's done. He's through.
Correct.
But black guy, football player, quoting Hitler, incorrectly, but quoting Hitler, he's okay, just needs to find more tolerance in his heart.
Or they suspended him in the same press release, or they fined him in the same press release. They said, we will not tolerate this in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
Well, you are tolerating it. You're letting him stay on your team.
Right.
I'm more against cancel culture than I think you were. Like, you wanted Mike Gundy fired immediately.
Yeah, I wanted him fired. To me, that's not canceling him. That's just firing him.
And it would be to cut Deshaun Jackson. I don't think he would ever get another job. So I'm okay.
Then he can't be that good if he would never get another job.
I don't know. Do you think Ray Rice never got another job because he wasn't good?
Yeah, I do.
I think Ray Rice never got another job because people didn't want to touch it. Do you think Colin Kaepernick never got another job because he wasn't good?
No, I think it was because he knelt during the national anthem.
Right. So there's it was too,
but
it
but
became
would you
too
say,
hot to touch.
Yeah, I you know, in the case of Gundy, firing him is not canceling him because he's free to coach somewhere else. You're not taking away his livelihood.
Right. Well, Colin Kaepernick's free to go play football somewhere else, right?
There is nowhere else.
Right. So what school would hire Mike Gundy if you fired him?
Well, then he can't be that good.
Well, Colin Kaepernick's good.
Yeah, but he was blackballed by the NFL.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying.
Saying Mike Gundy would be blackballed by college football.
I'm saying Deshaun Jackson would, too, if the Eagles cut him. I think what the Eagles are doing is kind of what they did with Michael Vick. Remember, Michael Vick didn't make his resurgence with the Falcons.
Right.
He made it with the Eagles.
Yeah, true.
The Eagles didn't cut Riley Cooper when he was caught on tape using the N-word.
Right.
And he plays on a team with 80% of black guys. No, Jeffrey Lurie's Jewish. Howie Roseman, the GM of the Eagles, is Jewish. It would be very easy for them to cut him. So I'm okay with the chance that they're giving him, but I was blown away, and still am, by the lack of outrage from people inside the league. Jeff Schwartz, who is, you know, Jewish, and his brother still play. I think his brother plays for the Chiefs, and Jeff played in the league. And you know, he was like the only guy who was saying, "Hey, this is outrageous, and here's why." And can you think of another? Did another player condemn Deshaun? An active player? No, he's not active. I don't think an active player did.
Chris Long, he's not active?
No, Chris is retired.
Chris came out and did an interview where he said not enough people have criticized DeSean Jackson.
Yeah, and I think you can criticize somebody without canceling him. I would have liked to seen Carson Wentz come out and say, look, DeSean is a teammate of mine, and if the organization lets him stay on the team, I'll throw the ball to him. But
what he wrote could have been straight out of Curt Schilling's timeline.
Right, and I was disappointed active players didn't denounce it. I guess that's where a lot of people denounced it that have nothing to lose, but it was almost like the NFL players didn't want to attack one of their own.
See, I didn't do a good job of denouncing it. I called it a cultural blind spot.
Well, you're not wrong about that. But it probably, like I said the other day with DeSean, I personally thought I would have been mad about it enough at the time where I probably would have cut bait, but I understand why the Eagles are going to let him redeem himself because we're seeing what cancel culture does, especially in a pandemic. It just puts people in the street.
Yeah. All right, coming up next for you is Radio Tinder. Linz has got some issues for us. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, it's time for some Radio Tinder. Linz is on a phone line today, but it sounds really clean. Lindsay, what do you got?
Great phone line over here, as Alan Sliwa would say. Great phone line. Great phone line.
Great phone line.
All right, so on the great phone line, a British man broke the Guinness World Record for the best indoor Ironman triathlon time by using stationary machines. Simon Jackson of Stevenage, England, live-streamed his attempt for the world to see on YouTube and broke the record using a rowing machine for the equivalent of 2.4 miles, riding a stationary bike for 112 miles, and running 26.2 miles on a treadmill. Jackson, who also used the event to raise money for Garden House Hospice Charity, finished with a time of 8 hours, 17 minutes, and 12 seconds, breaking the previous record by more than 7 minutes. It stood for 8 years previously. Some people on social media took issue with the fact that the record was broken by way of a, quote, virtual Ironman competition instead of a live event in person, even though his attempt was legitimized by a Guinness official. Breaking the Guinness World Ironman record using stationary equipment. Swipe left or swipe right?
Swipe left. I'm sorry. One of the things about doing an Ironman, Scott Kaplan would be good to speak to this since he's done one, is dealing with the conditions, the outdoor conditions. There's wind, there's sun, there's heat, there's cold. I mean, he didn't have to deal with any of that stuff inside the gym. So I don't think it should count as a record.
100% agree with you. Swipe left. This doesn't count. And not to demean the fact that he raised money for charity.
And good for him, you know.
Yeah. And Mason and I couldn't complete all those things, especially in the same day.
Not an easy thing, an impossible thing for most people to do, just not in the same category as actually running an Ironman.
Yeah, Lindsay, as noble of an exercise as this was and good for him for raising money, does not count. Guinness never should have rubber stamped this, not a real record.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you guys. I think the fact that he didn't have to face any elements, because that's one thing when people go in for these competitions, you never know what the weather's going to be like that day and what the current's going to be that you have to row against or whatever. So I'm in agreement with you guys on that one. Next one here, the pandemic has resulted in the resurgence of drive-in movie theaters, maybe even baseball, according to smart person Greg Bergman.
Yeah.
And the drive-ins are becoming a go-to attraction in the U.S. despite only having reruns to screen. As a result, Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, has propelled to the number one U.S. box office spot, beating Black Panther and Inside Out at numbers 2 and 3, respectively. The 40th anniversary edition of the 1980 Star Wars sequel grossed a five-day total of $644,000. So, quickly to put that into perspective for you guys with how other movies have been performing recently, 4th of July weekend, Ghostbusters grossed a five-day total of $656,000.
Okay.
Trolls World Tour raked in $656,000 over the four-day Memorial weekend, and Jurassic Park's Father's Day weekend banked $518,000 over 3 days. Now, also to note, the George Lucas tweaked reissue of Empire Strikes Back, released in February 97, also saw a number one box office weekend, but that time it grossed $22 million. So
okay,
pretty far off on the numbers there. So my question is, will the drive-in movie revival last past the pandemic? Swipe left or swipe right?
Swipe left for me, yeah.
Yeah, swipe left. I don't think so.
Man, you guys are a bowl of cherries today.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, go ahead, John.
Why would it? Why would you go sit in your car and watch movies?
It's fun. It's different.
Right, but I mean, I've been saying you could do it once, but once after this is over, I can't wait to get back into a movie theater. I want more communal experiences when I get the green light. I don't want less.
Yeah, and not to diminish drive-ins, because they have a great place in the history of Americana. But there are only – most of these are pop-ups. There's like a pop-up at the Rose Bowl with De Niro and Tribeca, and there are different pop-ups around town at the Americana brand at Pasadena. But in most cases, there are really only two drive-ins left, two actual drive-ins. There's one in the Valley, and there's one in Industry Hills. So it's not like there's going to be some great revival of drive-ins, because there just aren't many of them. Most of the ones we're seeing now are pop-ups. So those will go away once the pandemic is over.
But kind of like with the same question being, you know, this is the social distancing and everything is going to be the, quote, new normal that we're living in. To me, it would seem like if you own a movie theater, or if you say you were in the market to buy a movie theater, wouldn't it make more sense just to like buy a large area where you can cram in a lot more cars
no,
and
it
charge
would not.
People?
It would not. It would not. Having been in the theater, no.
Yeah, but and Lindsay, wasn't your question based on the premise that the pandemic was over? I think that your question becomes different if the pandemic is still going on.
Right, but I mean, there's still going to be people, I think, over the next year, let's say, like, you know, in the fall at some time we get a vaccine for it. I think it's going to take a lot of people. You know, you guys both have very differing opinions on how you feel about going into public places right now. So I think there's going to be a lot of people that have a hesitation. And so my question is more or less like, do you think the fact that it's like a different type of communal experience and family experience especially, and B, the fact that people aren't going to be so comfortable going into a theater. I could say probably half of my friends are going to wait a long time.
You know why drive-ins, you know why there aren't that many drive-ins left, right?
Because they don't make money?
Because they don't make money, exactly right. That's why you're not going to see more drive-ins in the end. I mean,
by the way, Mace, why is that? Why don't they make money?
Because think about it. You can, let's say you've got 60 cars.
Okay.
At a drive-in for one show a night, that's how much you make. You can only make money when it's actually dark outside.
And you charge by the car and not by the person, right?
Whereas in the regular theater business, you operate all day long and all night long, and you can seat up to, I mean, I had a theater that sat up to 400 people. And I could, I mean, I'd fill that up from 10 in the morning until 9 at night.
So since you were in the industry, Mace, here's my question for you. Why, like the drive-in that I go to, I don't know if it's an outlier, but it seems similar to the one that I went to out in L.A., where the one I went to in Ohio, it's very inexpensive. They charge $10 for an adult, $5 for a kid. You get to stay for both movies, you know, features one and two. And then the concessions are extremely affordable. They're very cheap. And so I never, like, sneak anything in because, obviously, like, I want to be able to put money in their pocket for, you know, the fact that they're able to keep the prices
so low.
How are they able to do that?
Well, they must have very cheap land that they're operating on. I'm assuming they're out in the boonies to some degree, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
If you buy cheap land well outside of a metropolitan area, out in the country, you can make that business model work, but it's hard to make it work in a city like Los Angeles or even in a city like Cleveland proper. It's very difficult to do that because the real estate is more valuable than the revenue that would be coming in from a drive-in theater.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. All right, last one here, also in the movie industry. For a while, Tenet held strong to its original July 17th release date. Then we found out in late June that the Christopher Nolan action thriller would indeed be pushed to August 12th. Well, movie theaters banking on the blockbuster for reopening success are likely in for a nasty surprise. According to the New York Post, industry experts say there's a very low likelihood of Tenet opening on August 12th due to the rising cases of COVID-19 in many major cities. MKM analyst Eric Handler said, quote, it would be surprising to see theaters able to reopen nationwide before September at the earliest. Movies coming back into actual movie theaters, not drive-ins, in 2020, period. Swipe left or swipe right.
In 2020. Boy, that is tough. I am going to swipe left. I don't think it's going to happen.
Three left for you today.
Yeah, three
I'll
lefts.
I'll actually swipe right on that. I think some movie theaters are going to try it. I mean, we're sitting here in July, so we've got 5 months. I would think that within 5 months, people are going to come up with ways, whether somebody creates partitions or social distances, or I don't know. I'm not giving up on movie theaters in 2020 yet.
But we're like going the wrong way. Like we're like going the wrong way. Like, for example, today salons are closed and nail salons and indoor eating and gyms and all that stuff just reclosed in the state of California. Movie theaters, obviously. Frankly, I don't know a movie theater that ever opened during this time.
Yeah, I don't either. And it also goes back to the movies. Like, aren't the production parts of the industry, aren't those still, like, I think they
tripled.
Just recently reopened, but...
Right, but Lindsay, some of those movies are in the can. A friend of mine, his business is he does trailers for movies. And he's done 4 or 5 trailers of movies. Like, Mace, I've told you about the one that Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote, In the Heights.
Yeah, In the Heights.
It's done, and it's supposedly great.
It's fantastic.
And they're just holding it until they can get people... But Lindsay, it's your point is well taken. They can't make new movies that aren't already done. But I'm guessing there are several movies. Tenet's one, In the Heights are one. I'm guessing there's probably 8 to 10 movies they could release if they wanted to. They just haven't released them.
Right, there are. But on the contrary, who wants to be the first one to go out and say, hey, our movie is for sure going to come out, because it could be a huge flop, and then everybody else is going to be like, oh, saw how that worked out.
Somebody is going to have to go first. That's the thing. Somebody is going to have to go first, and if it was, boy, I wouldn't do it with a gigantic blockbuster like Tenet, which in a normal world would probably open with $150 million on opening weekend. Can you afford to open a movie that might have opened to $150 million right now? You'll
Especially
never make
you
that
consider
that money.
The budgets of these movies these days.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
there's
no way.
It's really tough. I feel for my friends in the theater business, because it's a really rough time. Who would have thought, by the way, let's take bets on this. Fast and Furious 9, F9, is supposed to come out in late April of next year. Do you think it will be able to open?
Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe
who knows?
Be the first one.
Maybe we get a vaccine. That's the one key to all this stuff. If we can get a vaccine, our world is going to become a lot more like it was before this whole thing started. All right, coming up next for you, the Lakers lose Rajon Rondo. What does it mean for them? We'll get into that coming up next. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.